the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Can tokenization of real world assets unlock frozen value and spark an economic revival? It's an interesting question. And today we're joined by Shiven Mudli, CEO of a company called Novaque. He's a macro strategist with deep expertise in digital assets, financial regulation, and treasury services. Now, Shiven recently contributed a working paper on regulated tokenization in Ireland, and that was on behalf of the Central Bank of Ireland. It's an interesting study that really looks at ways that funds can unlock value and can through tokenization. But the question is, what about South Africa? Could we unlock value in illiquid assets by tokenizing them and then fractionalizing them? In other words, breaking them into tiny pieces represented by tokens, which can then be traded on an exchange. Now, think of bonds, think of real estate, farm plots, rare wines, fragrances, or anything else that has potential value that cannot really be traded, cannot be tokenized at the moment. But this is all about to change because they reckon that tokenization of real world assets will reach a market value of anything between $16 and $30 trillion by the year 2030. Now, Ireland is a hub for European funds. Could South Africa learn some lessons here? And what lessons are we talking about? Well, Shiven, hi, good to talk to you again. And this is quite interesting. You've taken your expertise over to Ireland from South Africa, and they've made you very useful over there. Tokenization is often projected that it's going to bring trillions of dollars of value to the world economy. It's going to unlock value in these frozen assets like farmland, like art, whatever you can think of. But realistically, what timelines and milestones do you see for meaningful economic impact? And do you really think that this could spark an economic revival in South Africa?
Hey, Kieran, and it's good to be back and to the listeners. It's good to get to share some insight. So overall, the working paper is about a recent paper or public information that the Central Bank of Ireland pushed out, and that was around they're looking at tokenization across the ecosystem, and there's significant players contributing to the insight in which how tokenization can be utilized within their framework. So the paper I drafted is around tokenization and how the vertical of funds, with Ireland being one of a significant player within it. So papers open free for everyone to read on my LinkedIn. But where we are currently in the situation of tokenization and what are the benefits? So where the emerging markets currently are in tokenization, there are exploratory examples of it happening. And this is across major institutions that are custody providers like the JP Morgans and the Citibanks, stuff like that. And when we look at the South African Reserve Bank, they also explored and experimented with DLT, which is distributed ledger technology. They have explored that with other central banks in terms of assets that were tokenized and then removed between banks. So where do we see that in the near future? I think it's something that is developing, and a lot of people are exploring this information. There are a lot of risks associated with it as quantum computing comes up in the near future, in the next 3 to 5 years. But where we are is looking at the value chain that is unlocked from private credit, creating secondary markets, infrastructure, invoice and trade finance rules, as well as accounts receivables. I don't think we might see sort of the tokenization of wines. I know people do it in South Africa, and there is a major player in that tokenizes like a variety of wines, and I think it's housed in Switzerland. I did come across them in my time in asset management, but there are these aspects of tokenization. And I mean, when we start looking at also tokenization, you might see aspects of easy equities, for example, that uses tokenized shares for easy properties. I mean, that might be something on the horizon. I don't know. But there's a lot of value that can spread across the opportunity for this new technology.
All right. Now, I mean, maybe just explain why tokenization is such a big deal. And you did bring up something there, which is a potential risk, and that's quantum computing, because the Bitcoin community, of course, has been looking at this for some years. The fear being that quantum computers could actually break the Bitcoin protocol and destroy the network. But the Bitcoin community, of course, has anticipated this and is working against that. You bring this up in the context of tokenization, and if this quantum computing can result in hacks, this is a major risk. So what is the community doing in that respect? Answer that question first, and then I'd like you to bring you back to South Africa and how we could unlock value here.
Sure. So the value in tokenization is really taking what the physical asset is. So for example, if we have an investor registry on a fund or variety of transfer agencies are looking to tokenize documents, have those sort of things within the space, that's where the fund sort of aspect lies. And then when we're looking at quantum computing, this is a range of sophisticated computers or technology that is developed. So where we are in AI, and sort of these quantum computers are just smarter than AI in simple terms, or are more advanced in AI. And they work in terms of jailbreaking sophisticated cryptography, hashes, passcodes. And a good example of how sophisticated AI right now is last week, someone used Claude Code to actually retrieve their seed phrase, which they forgot about a wallet. And that shows you how far we actually come with just Claude as a whole. But tying it back to South Africa and where that advantage lies, I know the capital flow management policy is something that has everyone up in arms, and every crypto person has the right to be.
But these are the new exchange control rules, right?
Yeah, and this sort of criminalizes anyone holding crypto or any sort of digital asset over a period of time. And I did collaborate with an article with a friend of mine, Ruan Buerta, on that, in terms of how this new chapter should be developed for exchange control for the Reserve Bank, because we look at the taxonomy of these digital assets. But tying that back to the benefit of South Africa, and what we're currently seeing is there is exploration in sort of this tokenization of assets. Is it live in the market? No, I don't think there is. I think there's a technology disparity in that user base to actually bring tokenization. And I think if anything is being tokenized currently, it's on the back end that's supporting these institutions to move money to and from at a low cost, higher speed. The velocity has increased significantly. And when you start looking at assets in terms of,
Shivan, just explain what you mean by the back end. So tokenization is happening in the back end. What? Amongst the banks, they're using tokenization of what? Stable coins? Just explain that.
Yeah. So when you're looking at a back end of, for example, let's take treasury services, for example, I know a lot of payment houses, ideally, one of their biggest selling points is faster payments, is ROI, but in utility and economics, it's not really ROI. And that's something we try to express to CFOs that we consult with, that a faster payment does not necessarily mean ROI, but having a fund that's tokenized, such as a money market fund that you have access to 24 hours and you are running this DeFi treasury, which is, it's a balance between holding fiat and holding some sort of assets in digital asset form, which is stable coin. Maybe Ethereum, Bitcoin, or Solana, for example, whether that be through a staking yield product or whether that's using these money market funds off these tokenized providers in order to move capital to and from at a higher frequency. But when talking about backends within banks, for example, that are using stable coins, for example, let's hypothetically take that APSA has a relationship with Ripple. Ripple has a variety of products that allow tokenization and that have a stable coin. Let's say if APSA were to use this idea of transfer pricing on their treasury desk, they would be buying different durations of bonds and would be selling different durations of bonds that they have on their balance sheet. That could happen interchangeably between banks, because another bank might have the exact same custody solution, which is a wallet infrastructure or something like that. But what it's really doing is saying that this tokenization of X amount of dollars that are sitting on their balance sheet can just move directly from Apps' balance sheet to, for example, NetBank's balance sheet, because the NetBank has a relationship with crypto.com, I think it is, that was announced. So there's those sort of things that happen in the back end. That means that when you're hedging your transfer pricing risk, you're moving money a lot more quicker than actually using the SWIFT network in order to collateralize certain transactions.
Okay. Now, let's go back to this question of whether tokenization could spark an economic revival. And let's focus on South Africa. What kind of frozen assets could be unleashed into the market that could create value, could create jobs, and get the economy pumping again?
So fundamentally, I think where good opportunity may arise is, let's say, for example, IDC wants to loan money to startups or give it to startups on either letter of credit function, for example, right? If you're using ZAR stablecoins, and let's, for example, in this example, use ZAR, that IDC partners with ZAR, and they issue those ZAR tokens to spend, you could actually see how they're spending in a live purpose, but also have control over those funds. So a lot of VCs are having this conversation right now that they would like to control the CFO function of these pre-seed to seed startups in order to control the flow of capital. But that's an example. You create opportunity through grant programs, and then you have some level of control in which how entrepreneurship is actually guided through the ecosystem using the stablecoin function, which is the tokenized asset of ZAR. And then when you start looking at more of the infrastructure layer and the private credit side, there's a function where companies are buying invoices on a long duration from receivable relationships, and then they may require liquidity or hedging in that point of view. They either can fractionalize that ownership of those assets through receivables, or they can buy those tokenized invoices. And we know that letter of credits are complex in nature as well, but they offer that opportunity for secondary market sales, whether that be a discounted invoice selling into the market or allowing the retail market to collateralize these invoices and then earn a reward from that. So for example, Kiran, if I'm selling apples to you and I need money to basically buy seeds for these apples, I know my harvest is X, and I can issue that invoice out and I can collateralize it. It's sort of this, how we would think of a stock felt, for example. And then you would get that receivable in the end, and you would get that return when I sell those apples and the money is paid back to me. I would settle those invoices. Those are sort of examples on an infrastructure basis. But when we're tokenizing, I think a lot of banks would likely be looking right now at invoices, receivables, infrastructure that can move at a bit of a better pace without triggering regulation, whether that be exchange control or a variety of limitations that push you into a Cat 2, Category 2 or 2A license, or collective investment scheme license. I think everyone's watching quite carefully.
Right. And where would this trade take place? Do you think the big exchanges like Luna and Valor would be the proper marketplace for that, or Mesh Trade, for example, which is specifically focused around this? Or do you see different markets developing? Where would the secondary markets be located?
So I think secondary markets will eventually turn to these large players of retail customers. I think it would likely be on their roadmap. I think it was Vala that had a post, or Fazam that had a post on X a little while ago and said, I can't remember, might be Vala, I might be wrong, but there was an aspect of the South African exchange stating that treasury bills would soon be coming to the platform, or they would like to pioneer treasury bills within the ecosystem. And I think that's
we're talking here US treasury bills.
U.S. treasury bills, yeah. Also helping the South African government access tokenization of these assets. I'm not sure it was someone I noticed from South Africa that posted it. And that was super interesting, because if you get fixed income right, or tokenization of fixed income, that it can be offered to South Africa. And let's say, for example, it is Valor and it's on Valor. I mean, that creates an entire new opportunity for people that are looking at retail savings bonds as a new opportunity. Collateralize your crypto in bear markets, buy some fixed income in South Africa, because you know you're going to get like, what, 8%, 9% on a fixed income yields. And then when you come back into the bear market, come back into the bull market, start converting back into BTC or pulling your collateral out.
Right. I mean, it's clear we've moved a long way from, you know, Bitcoin bros and people who saw crypto as really a Bitcoin story with a few other tokens or coins tagged on like Ethereum and Solana and so on. We're now talking about a whole infrastructure that the traditional finance is going to have to migrate over to, and that's blockchain. And there are other risks that come with that. You mentioned quantum computing. But I guess the question that South African regulators are trying to solve are still there. One of them being, how do you get people to on-ramp to something which is quite complicated, you know, when you have a digital wallet? And I think back to the days of, you know, ATMs, when the banks were trying to get ATMs popularized. It took a long while. They used to have people that stand there at the ATM, you know, a bank employee, and he'd show you, you've got to put in your PIN, but you don't tell your PIN to anybody. And this is how you draw cash. And of course, we became a world leader in that. It did take some years. On-ramping people to, you know, for digital assets to wallets, whether they're hardware wallets or software wallets, is going to be tricky. And I don't see that happening at the grassroots level, not for a long time. I think that's probably still 10 years away. What do you think about that?
I think I agree with you. I think we're still very far away from like people having those crypto kind of wallets. But I think that it depends on how fast this mobile money ecosystem grows, because it's sort of been the front-facing user interface for many of the population across Africa, not just South Africa. The rise of payment providers using that as the front-facing UI and having these stablecoin crypto rails at the back is what's happening. So while you may say, I have a bank card, you're currently saying, I have a mobile wallet that's equally doing fiat as well as stablecoin, and or equally doing crypto. So I guess it's how you're looking at it, but the UI is what's becoming the most popular transmission mechanism to bring people into this wallet ecosystem. Because what we're noticing as well is the wallets that are being created now are more abstract, meaning that you could use an email and a password and stuff like that, avoiding the seed phrase or the secret phrase in this process. And I think there's opportunity, yes, because people are used to just using their email, using their cell number, and continuing going. But I guess self-custody comes with the seed phrase because it's important. And like I made the joke the moment the National Treasury published it. I'm like, if you confiscate my crypto, you ideally going to need my seed phrase. But if you find my seed phrase, please tell me, because I lost two wallets by forgetting my seed phrase.
All right, let's just wrap up with this very quickly, Shivan, and the exchange control rules. What do you make of this? I mean, there's been massive backlash against the Reserve Bank. This is an overreach. This seems to be, were they flying a trial balloon? Just see what the reaction will be, because it's pretty bizarre that you would have to go to the extent of maybe having a border agent asking you for your seed phrase. You know, this clearly violates many different constitutional protections, being, you know, protection of private property, protection of speech, yeah. Because as people have pointed out, your seed phrase is speech. What do you make of this?
Yep, I agree. I think they definitely were overreaching, and I think it was definitely a shot in the dark. I think the people that wrote that sort of document, which was terrible, never really, I would take a wild guess and say no more than 50% of them that wrote that document has either staked Ethereum to a protocol for governance, bought governance tokens, swapped done anything because nothing was relevant in terms of how taxonomy of cryptos actually looked like. They just generalized digital assets and then they were like, yes, we're going to criminalize that. But you criminalized it to a level that you also going to prevent innovation from the banks, the banking sector looking at it. You're going to, you have Revolut knocking on your doorstep, and that's a very native crypto bank that's coming in. And they're a majority of their business is done on crypto. I use Revolut quite often. But those are the questions that are now playing in the space. It's when you read my core the paper in a for the exchange control side, you would see that there was a variety of categories that I put crypto assets under because it's important to classify them to what they are. And where we've been sort of shortfall in this process is everyone that's writing papers currently are taking information that of what was 4 years ago being developed and where we are now. But we can't really sit with that mindset because where we were 6 months ago and where we are now from AI innovation or just general payment innovation, it's like chalk and cheese. And I assume by the next 18 months, we're going to be completely different to where we are now. And it just comes down to that innovation just continuously growing and people finding more ways to do different types of payments. Different solutions will eventually appear, tokenization and a variety of other functions.
I agree. I think it's going to be very stifling for innovation in this space, and it probably isn't going to fly given the ferocity of the backlash that has happened. But we're going to leave it there. Shiven Moodley, macro strategist and CEO of Novaic. Thanks very much for your time, Shiven.
Thanks, Kieran, and thanks to everyone. Looking forward to the next one.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. Bitcoin. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.